to the actions yesterday of Exxon and its predecessor responsible party, Alyeska, by the Alaskan Department of Environmental Conservation.
Congressman, you're referring to a document there that I don't have the benefit of.
Well, I've told you what
it says. But even if I did, that is speaking to Alyeska's contingency plan and an analysis done by ADEC, which again, I have no knowledge of.
So you disown the contingency plan. You had nothing to do with it.
I think my statement earlier speaks to our involvement in the development of the contingency plan. I would also note that ADEC was much more involved in that contingency plan than we were as one member of the owners committee. And that plan can't be much of a surprise to ADEC. They approved that plan as recently as 1987.
Your attempts to disown it are startling, and I look forward to coming back. I will now yield the rest of my time.
Yep. Mr. Fazio.
Yep. Let's pursue dispersants a little bit more. I had the opportunity to do a little bit of penciling here. I guess this is really Mr. Iorossi's department. How much you told us that if your experts said, oh, excuse me, this was Mr. Stevens, up to 50% could have been dispersed if, and that's making an assumption that the dispersion activities, dispersal activities went on through Wednesday or Thursday of that first week. The experts said up to 50%, then you said a good guesstimate would be 35 to 40 or maybe 45. And technical considerations were used to reach these computations. Okay, we've got the equipment, we've got the DC-6, which apparently wasn't working too well, and we have the C-130. Now, we had, as I understand, 12 hours, about 12 hours of daylight. Do you agree with the Coast Guard that you couldn't apply dispersant after it was dark?
Yes. Okay. Yes, absolutely. That plane flies 50 feet over the water. And there's no way we would ask them to fly after about, I'd say 5:30. No way we'd ask them to
get down to 50 feet. And it was getting light at 5:30 in the morning. I wasn't here then. I don't know.
I think it was about 6:30, something like that.
Okay, so you had about 11 hours daylight. Let's use 12 because I use 12 for my calculations. Let's be generous.
Okay.
How much you manufacture the core exit? Is this the core exit 9527? Is that what
it is? Yes, that's right.
Okay, what would be the application ratio for a spill of this nature, waters of this temperature, et cetera? What would it be? What would be the
I'm going to let Mr. Stevens, since he's become the expert on that.
Congressman, I'm not a technical expert on dispersants, but again, consultation with our experts. You would begin by trial treat ratios at the leading edge of the spill in order to contain it and try to keep it from spreading. I think in this instance, Frank, that that first test was at a treat ratio of about 30 or 40 to 1, if I recall.
He was using between 6 and 7 gallons per acre.
What's that ratio?
I don't know. I believe it was about 1 to 30.
1 to 30. That's
yeah,
what I
but that's,
told.
That's what I was told later.
Treat ratios as high as 1 to 100 or so are effective depending on the conditions, and that's why the experts monitor and learn by in actual application, if you will. The calculations I've made, Congressman, which is, I believe, what your question is, use a range of treat ratios, which vary over time as well, because time is a factor also.
Okay, well, the...
If I might, one other point. The number that I've quoted was up to 45%. I believe the chairman referred to a statement out of Fortune magazine that my chairman had made, which used the 50% figure, but that was based on the old 240,000 barrel spill estimate.
Okay. Well, Alyeska has disclaimed these letters, but I'll just use it since it is in writing, and they're talking about a spill that has dispersed to 0.1 millimeter in thickness in these conditions. And what was the approximate thickness of the spill? I mean, they're saying you've got to use 1 to 20 for 4/1,000ths of an inch, and you're going to use 1 to 40 or 1 to 100 for something thicker. Is that
Congressman, I can't comment on what Alyeska wrote in an application, but I think I recall the numbers correctly, that if you take this oil having weathered a bit and spread it over water 1 millimeter thick, it'll cover about 11 square miles. And my recollection is that by Saturday afternoon, the spill was considerably larger than that. So, again, I can't comment on the calculation.
Okay, well, if we adopt... was the DC 6 going to be somehow fixed so it became operational?
No, it had a spray arrangement on it that at the time Mr. Emery felt he could not
rearrange it.
Rearrange, but he sent out another DC 6. So that one went home and another one came in.
Okay, so you were planning on conducting the operation with two planes?
Well, yeah, we had the C-130 in operation.
Okay, well, what I'm trying to get at here is we're disregarding the bad weather that came in and the dispersion that went on there. I mean, what I want to get at is that you're saying you could have dispersed up to 45% by Wednesday or Thursday. I don't know whether that takes into account the weather that actually occurred, does it? I mean, the weather that actually occurred starting Sunday
night?
Yes,
obviously there was a period on Monday when no flights were possible. But let me say that what we have said is that we believe that full application of dispersants right from the start could have significantly mitigated the impact of the spill on the beach.
Okay, where would you have gotten the dispersant? And how could you, I mean, I've just penciled this whole thing out, and you figure the number of drums you need, the equipment you had available, the amount of time per sortie. I'm being very generous according to this. It's 2 hours. So we give you, you can turn a plane around in 6 hours, load it, and get it back and load it and do it again. So you have one at dawn, you have one at midday, you have one late in the day. It would take 11 days with one plane.
If I could, Congressman, we could get in per plane 4 to 5 trips per day. It's only a run out to Anchorage and back. And clearly, both the operators of the C-130s and our people said that once we got going, 4 to 5 trips. In fact, the flight crews say they could have done 5 trips unequivocally. We had dispersant coming in.
We had
88 drums come in on Saturday, 471 on Sunday, 154 on Monday, 996 on Tuesday when we shut down the operation. We were making 800 drums a day at the plant. We had 2,570 drums in worldwide inventory at the time of the incident. If you match up aircraft and drums, you'll find that Saturday and Sunday we could have had an additional 4 runs. Monday we could have had 4 runs. Tuesday we were up to...
And you would have applied how much dispersant in that time?
Each one of those runs is about 5,100 gallons.
So you would have applied how much? I mean, obviously, you've been looking at this question. On Monday night, you would have applied how much dispersant?
4 runs on Saturday and Sunday, we would have applied an additional 21,000 gallons, Saturday and Sunday. Monday and another additional 21,000 gallons.
Well, I'm using my colleague's time here, but what's the 20-to-1 ratio give you?
That's a good line.
We could figure it out. I couldn't do it right now.
And in fact,
but again, we started...
Isn't it 500,000 gallons?
We started with...
You got 10 million gallons of oil.
Yes,
Congressman, we've not said that we could handle the whole spill.
No, I understand
that.
We've
been very careful to say that.
We're just trying to put it in perspective here. Because then we have a whole miserable performance on what was left over, even if you did this. I mean, there's no indication you could skim it either. So we're just trying to figure out what works here.
Let me reply to the dispersant question on Saturday and Sunday. We started with a higher treat ratio than you referenced.
I understand.
And I'm satisfied that if we had been applying an all-out application, that we would have gotten to higher treat ratios and had more effect.
There's considerable scientific literature that suggests that may not be the case in these waters.
Well, when you see the tape of the test on Sunday, you will forget all that scientific literature.
So you've got tabletop dispersants going now. You've broken through all of the scientific literature and what you can do in cold waters with Arctic oil.
No, Congressman, we have scientific data and scientific literature available
to us. You
better
crank up your production. You got a new product.
That it's a very effective product. It's one of the best in the world. You're correct.
Okay, well,
again, the facts of whether it does or doesn't work are shown in the videotape.
Okay,
There's no ambiguity in that.
I'm certain that this is going to be extensively debated and litigated because it seems to be your primary defense. I think we ought to, we're going to get on to burning and some other things, but we have a problem between the testimony of the Coast Guard, ADEC, and your testimony regarding restraints upon the use of this. I think you got further constraints in terms of availability, the application aircraft, the amount of light you had and all that, but I mean, it's a little too much to get into right now.
Let me just
go to something really simple. I mean, you've made your assertion. Other people have made conflicting assertions. It'll get sorted out. I want to deal with something really simple.
Yes.
And because I'm having trouble dealing with oranges and dispersants and all the other things we have to deal with here. Let's talk about birds and otters, and let's talk about the statement that later we set up a bird and otter recovery center in Seward. We just had testimony, or it wasn't testimony, but we have a witness in the audience who has just returned from Seward who says that there is no otter recovery center in Seward, that you're using the bird recovery center. It's not comparable even to the one that we have here in Valdez that was thrown together, Valdez. And, yet we have an assertion that we're taking care of the otters in Seward. She says you're not taking care of the otters in Seward. Perhaps we can get to that. I mean, we may have to send someone there to settle this argument, but why don't you tell us your side of what you got going in Seward for the otters?
Yes, sir. I'll be glad to do that. We do have an otter facility in Seward. It is an otter facility designed to be expanded to handle 75 otters. It was initially set up with capability of handling 25 otters. It is currently undergoing the second stage of expansion to handle 50 otters. At that point, we do have spare capacity within the Valdez facility at this time. We do have an otter facility. We have a team on site. We'll be glad to take anyone there and show them that facility.
Carson Veno had some experience with the number of otters that...
Well, they had applied for a 75. You refused that. It went to only 25. It just recently opened, and now you're expanding it because you initially refused to open it to an adequate size, according to the request. Is that right? You refused the size?
We advised in our response that we would build one in a modular form capable of expanding to 75. When we built the one for 25, there were eight otters on hand.
They already delivered 28 otters. So
okay, are the 28 otters being cared for in a suitable otter facility similar to or superior to the one we saw here, or are they being taken care of in a makeshift facility that's actually for birds, and you do not yet have all the tanks and all the other equipment that you have here for otters for those original 25 in addition to the ones that they want to deliver that you won't accept delivery of?
They're being cared for in a quality facility.
Well, quality is one thing. Appropriateness is
another. Appropriate quality based on the best expert advice we have available.
Okay, so it's similar to what we have here.
In my opinion, and based on our advice that's coming from our experts involved, that it is better.
Well, it's interesting that we have someone who just returned who says that the otter portion is not open.
It is open.
I don't know how to resolve that contradiction, but
maybe we can get
we'll be able to get an impartial party there today to make a judgment.
We'll be glad to have.
Communication problem with what's going on. I mean, the scientists in the area said it isn't open; it's just opening. It's undersized. You refused the larger size, and now you're telling us it's wonderful and it's working. I mean, is this a plan on paper or is this a plan in reality?
Congressman, if we might, the question of whether it is or isn't open and its suitability, perhaps if you leave the record open, we'll submit some information as of today.
Well, that's what the hearing's for.
Well, that's up to the chairman, but I believe the record is going to remain
obviously
open.
I think that this is
This was a simple question.
This must be resolved. It's a fairly simple question. Either you have a first-class facility in sewer that can address this problem, or you don't. And again, I'm not sure how much you get to dictate what is and what isn't. The question is, does it suit the needs of the recovery of these otters and trying to the greatest extent, ensure their viability and survival of this tragedy? And we've heard from a number of different sources that is not the case. And I think, fine, get on the phone and ask somebody to get out of here and go resolve it, whether it is or it isn't. You know, it's not we're not talking about dispersants and square centimeters here. We're talking about whether or not you have a facility that is sized and capable of delivering the kind of care that these animals need. I think that's the question.
Yeah, if that wasn't simple either, so I think at this point I'm going to have to regroup and see if I can come up with something that can be answered.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm sorry I took my colleague's time, but what is the, a couple of times here we've got the, I got the impression that somehow the Coast Guard and the national government, everyone signs off on this these contingency plans. At one point you said they were reviewed, at one time you said they were approved. But what is the role of the national government in terms of this, these plans, in your judgment, Mr. Stevens? Mr. Stevens made the statement, if the other gentleman would like to answer, it's fine with me.
The question again, what is the role of the national government?
Right, are these reviewed, approved, or what is the point? Or are they just filed?
It's my understanding that federal authorities did review the plan and sign off on it.
And so that's your view, and so what does that mean in terms of their responsibility or legal responsibility?
I can't say because I'm not in a position to speak for the government.
Well, in your view, what is it? I'm not asking you to speak for the government. I'm asking you to speak for Exxon as the president. That's what you're doing, I assume.
No, but you're asking me to speak about the role of the government legal sense, and I can't comment. I have no knowledge.
Oh, good. Well, okay. Let me talk about something you do have some responsibility for. We visited the USS Juno the other day. It was Saturday. And while we were there, there was a dispute going on between the contractor, Vico, and Exxon about not deploying the personnel on the beach that morning. We were there, and they didn't go out until we went out at 10 or 10:15. We went to look and see what they were doing. People that are working hard trying to get something done. Who's in charge of this cleanup effort, Exxon or Vico?
Exxon.
Exxon's in charge. So what this type of dispute then is your responsibility, is that right?
That is correct. Would you like some background on that particular dispute?
I know some of the people didn't get out until 12 o'clock. I heard they were complaining because somebody had been there the day before and that they had to do some extra work. What was the background, just briefly?
The background was on the condition of the weather that morning as to getting a proper judgment on what were the safe conditions for disembarking people. As you know, we moved people from the Juno in small landing craft to the beach areas. And while it was a dispute, I think it was one of those things where everybody was trying to resolve the best answer for the safety of the people involved. There was no indication on the part of anybody that there was any reluctance to work. The question is, what's the safest position to be in for all of the people?
Okay, well, we don't want to get in the way of safety, but we would like to see some of the oil picked up. We noticed that of course, as you know from, I suppose you're in the audience, I just been out to Kenai and out to Katmai and to those areas looking at what's going on. And there is no, I don't think that Exxon or anyone has demonstrated any capacity. You know, we talked about how we can disperse it, how we can do that. It seems like Exxon has a great ability to drop things in the water, but its ability to pick them up seems to be rather limited. What is the excuse for not having picked up more of this oil at this point? And who is responsible for these figures that we have in this fact sheet? You heard the exchange between myself and the Admiral. Are these your figures? According to this, 176,000 barrels of something was picked up. That means we only have, according to your figures, something like revised figures I might have, because now we've discovered it's not 240, but 260,000. Now we have only according to this calculation, some 75,000 more barrels to go. Where the hell did these figures come from?
Congressman, could we see the figures so we might comment knowledgeably?
Sure. I keep giving these sheets away. I don't... But the point is that it suggests that 84,000 evaporated. Is that your contention, Mr. Harrison, that 84,000 have evaporated, Mr. Arasi?
Well, if we might keep two questions separate, I'll reply to the second one in a moment. The first question is, how much have you picked up? Mr. Harrison will respond to that. I'll reply to the question that you raised about evaporation.
Oh, okay. Let me address as to how do we measure the amount of oil that's been picked up. We recognize that in individual skimmers, and you've heard the numbers, we have a large number of individual skimmers working. When those individual skimmers pick up oil, they do pick up some water with them. So we do not attempt to measure the oil once it's in an individual skimmer. We transfer that oil to a barge where we're holding, a set of barges where we're holding this material until we can process it for recovery. Within that barge, then, we then measure each day how much is put into that barge. We recognize that that's a difficult measurement. We have brought in a consultant, a firm by the name of Calibret, to take a look at that. They did measure the oil that was in that barge and found in the part that they could sample that there was about 3% water. Now, we were not able to get a complete sampling because this is a very difficult emulsion, and we don't want to understate how difficult it is to get an accurate measurement. To be somewhat on the conservative side, we said, if you measured 3, we'll assume 10. And we take the measurements that are in the barge, we deduct 10%, and we come up with a daily number that's recovered. And that's the way we do that measurement.
Well, whose figures are these that we have here before us?
On the oil recovered, those look like they come out of our data. I'm not sure on this date we were not publishing these other numbers. I'm not sure where they came from.
Well, we would hope for the record we'd get that straightened out. If not,
we'll do so, Congressman. Let me make one other comment. We're picking up all the oil we can every day. And whether that calculation is off plus or minus X percent makes no difference in terms of what we're doing. Our objective is to skim, clean as much as we can every day.
Well, I think.
And so the calculation, if you will, is almost of academic interest. But it does indicate the effectiveness of a rather massive skimming and booming operation.
Got a long way to go. What about the evaporation? Do you think in the plan it says that only 15% of it's going to evaporate, and this document suggests that over a third of it is already evaporated?
Congressman, I was made aware when I came in late Saturday of your interest in that question during the briefing that we gave the committee.
And, I wasn't there, so.
Am I correct, Mr. Chairman?
Yeah.
And as a consequence, we had our technical experts prepare a little paper for you for the scientific basis for the weathering calculation. And if you will, I will read you the first couple of sentences of this paper. And
well, is that the conclusion? Is it 84,000? Is that the conclusion that they've came up with or not, Mr.
The conclusion is that our estimates of evaporation are 35%, which is plus or minus 7%. And when you include the amount dispersed naturally as well as biodegradation, we get 45% of the oil has weathered or otherwise disappeared naturally. We have...
How do you break that down in a pie? Of that 45%, how much do you give to evaporation, biodegradation?
Why don't I give the committee the table, and you can all, since
well, I think it's going to go into a lot of detail.
See his table,
right.
We'll let you see ours.
Okay. I think they're both yours, as a matter of fact. Don't pay attention to those little words I wrote around.
Let me just read you the first couple of sentences in this paper. During the course of the cleanup operations, calculations have been made to estimate the loss of oil due to the natural processes of evaporation, dispersion, and biodegradation. These have been made using the methods reported in the scientific literature and accepted as the best currently available. Now, if you look over to the table on the second page, Mr. Chairman, you'll see the answer to your question, and you'll also see our 45% plus or minus 10% compared with a NOAA estimate of 40% plus or minus 10%. That NOAA estimate comes from a pie chart that was attributed to NOAA in an Anchorage newspaper, as noted by the footnote.
Yeah, we NOAA's been doing a lot of predicting that's been inaccurate with regards to where this stuff is going to go. Well,
respect to your second question, I can't comment on the 15% evaporation in the Alyeska
plan. Well, you participated in the plan, or somebody did. I assume it wasn't based on something pulled out of the air. And I just wonder, you know, Mother Nature may be on your side, but, you know, I have some real questions about that. So.
Well, here again, Congressman, let me say that we're committed to cleaning the mess up.
Well, let me
and whatever the volume is,
let me just
we're going to be out there and get it done.
Let me pick up on that, because you've got a contingency plan that does not address, the assumptions in your contingency plan that I read here do not address the park areas, and I want to know why. I mean, and of course, I don't agree with all your assumptions in here, but I won't go into a debate of that. Considering that the response gets on shore, I mean, they're not picking it up. We just took this trip. I saw all of these streamers of brown tar-like substance. They're all over the place. They're all in the response plan doesn't address it. And so you got this in Kodiak, Kenai, and in the Katmai area. And the beaches are bearing it. I mean, the plan should be to get out in front of that before, and you're not even addressing this particular issue in the plan in these particular regions.
May I answer that, Mr.
Yeah,
Thomas?
You signed the plan. I think you ought to answer.
Let me address that in several parts, if you will. First, let me address the Kenai Peninsula. We do have people actively working in the shoreline, nearshore areas, recovering oil in the area where there is oil at those locations right now. In addition, we have an on-site assessment team working with a Homer MAC group, that's a multi-agency committee, looking at the six key sites that they have identified. We have just completed a survey out of Seward with that MAC team working in that association with that group to verify that there was no need to do work at this time on the pupping areas for the seals, which were critical in that area. We have an archaeologist on site today, which I believe Admiral Robbins referred to earlier, on those parklands that in the Katmai area to be sure that we have an appropriate plan. We could not put people on the beach there yesterday in it. We did not have a fully safe integrated plan for that to work.
Do you have
we are moving. We are moving in that direction.
Do you have them on the beach today, as you promised?
We did not promise to have them on the beach today.
Well,
but
said
we will
have them on the beach.
Pardon me.
Well, I was told that they were supposed to be on the beach today.
What we had advised and discussed with the admiral yesterday that we were in the process of developing a plan for him to approve that would safely put people on those beaches in compliance with the park rules and regulations. We're moving as rapidly as we can to get agreements from all of the parties that are involved. We are committed to clean up those beaches. There is a secondary item that you need to consider relative to timing. Our environmental experts advise that the time to be on the beaches doing the cleanup is at the time when you have potential for minimum impact from major re-oiling from free water, from free oil on the nearby waters. And it is only in the past few days that we've been in the position in the Shelikof Straits where we can really say that there's no major recoverable free oil on the surface of the water for open ocean skimming.
Is it your contention that the brown tar substance is not recoverable on the surface?
We're not saying that.
You said there's no recoverable oil on the surface.
By open ocean skimming, the type of vessel that we had in there were the Russian skimmer, the Corps of Engineer dredges, the Clean Seas 3.
You mean to tell me you're not going to be able to pick up any of that material that I saw out there?
We are going to be able to pick up that material that you saw out there, but not with that major open ocean equipment that was in the area. We have had equipment in the area, we have had people in the area, and we will be moving people onto those beaches under an approved
plan. There were individuals picking up the dead animals on the beach to avoid the, I agree in a priority, that is a priority, but there is also a tendency, of course, for that to get buried by the sand action and the wave action, and it's happening, and it's occurring, and so I think, why doesn't the plan address this? Why isn't this in the plan that you signed?
The May 1st plan does address picking up and oil and cleaning beaches outside of the Prince William Sound. Yes, sir, it does.
Well, it says other contingencies were made. It's not in the plan. It just makes a statement as other areas develop, but it does not in detail address that, and yet this plan was submitted on May, just here in May 1st or 3rd or something.
We estimated a total of 100 impacted miles, of which over 70 would be cleaned. That was defined in the plan, even though the detailed survey assessment has not been completed at this time.
Well, I just would point out in that statement that you gave, the command center points out there's only been about a mile and a third of beach cleaned so far as of whatever, May 4th. So we've got literally hundreds of miles, I'd say, in this area that that have this brown tar material on it, out of the 625 miles.
Mr. Harrison, have you received a letter from the regional director of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service about the sewer?
It's a fairly simple question. Either you have a first-class facility in sewer that can address this problem, or you don't. And again, I'm not sure how much you get to dictate what is and what isn't. The question is, does it suit the needs of the recovery of these otters and trying to the greatest extent, ensure their viability and survival of this tragedy? And we've heard from a number of different sources that that is not the case. And I think, fine, get on the phone and ask somebody to get out of here and go resolve it, whether it is or it isn't. You know, it's not we're not talking about dispersants and square centimeters here. We're talking about whether or not you have a facility that is sized and capable of delivering the kind of care that these animals need. I think that's the question.
Yeah, if that wasn't simple either, so I think at this point I'm going to have to regroup and see if I can come up with something that can be answered.
Beto.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm sorry I took my colleague's time, but what is the, a couple of times here we've got the, I got the impression that somehow the Coast Guard and the national government, everyone signs off on this these contingency plans. At one point you said they were reviewed, at one time you said they were approved. But what is the role of the national government in terms of this these plans? In your judgment, Mr. Stevens? Mr. Stevens made the statement, if the other gentleman would like to answer, it's fine with me.
The question again, what is the role of the national government?
Right, are these reviewed, approved, or what is the point? Or are they just filed?
It's my understanding that federal authorities did review the plan and sign off on it.
And so that's your view, and so what does that mean in terms of their responsibility or legal responsibility?
I can't say because I'm not in a position to speak for the government.
Well, in your view, what is it? I'm not asking you to speak for the government. I'm asking you to speak for Exxon as the president. That's what you're doing, I assume.
No, but you're asking me to speak about the role of the government in a legal sense, and I can't comment. I have no knowledge.
Oh, good. Well, okay. Let me talk about something you do have some responsibility for. We visited the USS Juno the other day. It was Saturday. And while we were there was a dispute going on between the contractor, Vico, and Exxon about not deploying the personnel on the beach that morning. We were there, and they didn't go out until we went out at 10 or 10:15. We went to look and see what they were doing. People that are working hard and trying to get something done. Who's in charge of this cleanup effort, Exxon or Vico?
Exxon.
Exxon's in charge. So what this type of dispute then is your responsibility, is that right?
That is correct. Would you like some background on that particular dispute?
I know some of the people didn't get out till 12 o'clock. I heard they were complaining because somebody had been there the day before and that they had to do some extra work. What was the background, just briefly?
The background was on the condition of the weather that morning as to getting a proper judgment on what were the safe conditions for disembarking people. As you know, we moved people from the Juno in small landing craft to the beach areas.
And while it was a dispute, I think it was one of those things where everybody was trying to resolve the best answer for the safety of the people involved. There was no indication on the part of anybody that there was any reluctance to work. The question is, what's the safest position to be in for all of the people?
Okay, well, the we don't want to get in the way of safety, but we would like to see some of the oil picked up. We noticed that of course, as you know from, I suppose you're in the audience, I've just been out to Kenai and out to Katmai and to those areas looking at what's going on. And there is no, I don't think that Exxon or anyone has demonstrated any capacity. You know, we talked about how we can disperse it, how we can do that. It seems like Exxon has a great ability to drop things in the water, but its ability to pick them up seems to be rather limited. What is the excuse for not having picked up more of this oil at this point? And who is responsible for these figures that we have in this fact sheet? As you heard the exchange between myself and the Admiral, are these your figures? According to this, 176,000 barrels of something was picked up. That means we only have, according to your figures, something like revised figures I might have, because now we've discovered it's not 240, but 260,000. Now we have only, according to this calculation, some 75,000 more barrels to go. Where the hell did these figures come from?
Congressman, could we see the figures so we might comment knowledgeably?
Sure. I keep giving these sheets away. I don't... But the point is that it suggests that 84,000 evaporated. Is that your contention, Mr. Harrison, that 84,000 have evaporated, Mr. Arasi?
Well, if we might keep two questions separate, I'll reply to the second one in a moment. The first question is, how much have you picked up? Mr. Harrison will respond to that. I'll reply to the question that you raised about evaporation.
Oh, okay. Let me address as to how do we measure the amount of oil that's been picked up. We recognize that in individual skimmers, and you've heard the numbers, we have a large number of individual skimmers working. When those individual skimmers pick up oil, they do pick up some water with them. So we do not attempt to measure the oil once it's in an individual skimmer. We transfer that oil to a barge where we're holding, a set of barges, where we're holding this material until we can process it for recovery. Within that barge then, we then measure each day how much is put into that barge. We recognize that that's a difficult measurement. We have brought in a consultant, a firm by the name of Calibret, to take a look at that. They did measure the oil that was in that barge and found in the part that they could sample that there was about 3% water. Now, we were not able to get a complete sampling because this is a very difficult emulsion, and we don't want to understate how difficult it is to get an accurate measurement. To be somewhat on the conservative side, we said, if you measured 3, we'll assume 10. And we take the measurements that are in the barge, we deduct 10%, and we come up with a daily number that's recovered. And that's the way we do that measurement.
Well, whose figures are these that we have here before us?
On the oil recovered, those look like they come out of our data. I'm not sure. On this date, we were not publishing these other numbers. I'm not sure where they came from.
Well, we would hope for the record we'd get that straightened out, if not.
We'll do so, Congressman. Let me make one other comment. We're picking up all the oil we can every day. And whether that calculation is off plus or minus X percent makes no difference in terms of what we're doing. Our objective is to skim, clean as much as we can every day.
Well, I think.
And so the calculation, if you will, is almost of academic interest. But it does indicate the effectiveness of a rather massive skimming and booming operation.
Got a long way to go. What about the evaporation? Do you think in the plan it says that only 15% of it's going to evaporate, and this document suggests that over a third of it is already evaporated?
Congressman, I was made aware when I came in late Saturday of your interest in that question during the briefing that we gave the committee.
Well, and, I wasn't there, so.
Am I correct, Mr. Chairman?
Yeah.
And as a consequence, we had our technical experts prepare a little paper for you for the scientific basis for the weathering calculation.
And if you will, I will read you the first couple of sentences of this paper and then submit it to you.
Is that the conclusion? Is it 84,000? Is that the conclusion that they came up with or not, Mr.
The conclusion is that our estimates of evaporation are 35%, which is plus or minus 7%. And when you include the amount dispersed naturally as well as biodegradation, we get 45% of the oil has weathered or otherwise disappeared naturally.
How do you break that down in a pie? Of that 45%, how much do you give to evaporation, biodegradation?
Why don't I give the committee the table, and you can all,
I think it's going to go into a lot of detail.
See his table,
right.
We'll let you see ours.
Okay. I think they're both yours, as a matter of fact. Don't pay attention to those little words I wrote around.
Let me just read you the first couple of sentences in this paper. During the course of the cleanup operations, calculations have been made to estimate the loss of oil due to the natural processes of evaporation, dispersion, and biodegradation. These have been made using the methods reported in the scientific literature and accepted as the best currently available. Now, if you look over to the table on the second page, Mr. Chairman, you'll see the answer to your question, and you'll also see our 45% plus or minus 10% compared with a NOAA estimate of 40% plus or minus 10%. That NOAA estimate comes from a pie chart that was attributed to NOAA in an Anchorage newspaper, as noted by the footnote.
Yeah, NOAA's been doing a lot of predicting that's been inaccurate with regards to where this stuff is going to go. Well,
respect to your second question, I can't comment on the 15% evaporation in the Alyeska
plan. Yeah. Well, you participated in the plan, or somebody did. I assume it wasn't based on something pulled out of the air. And I just wonder, you know, Mother Nature may be on your side, but, you know, I have some real questions about that.
Well, here again, Congressman, let me say that we're committed to cleaning the mess up.
Well,
we're going to be out there and get it done.
Let me just pick up on that, because you've got a contingency plan that does not address, the assumptions in your contingency plan that I read here did not address the park areas, and I want to know why. I mean, and of course, I don't agree with all your assumptions in here, but I won't go into a debate of that. Considering that the response gets on shore, I mean, they're not picking it up. We just took this trip. I saw all of these streamers of brown tar-like substance. They're all over the place. They're all in the response plan doesn't address it. And so you got this in Kodiak, Kenai, and in the Katmai area, and the beaches are bearing it. I mean, the plan should be to get out in front of that before, and you're not even addressing this particular issue in the plan in these particular regions.
May I answer that, Mr.
Yeah, you signed the plan. I think you ought to answer.
Let me address that in several parts, if you will. First, let me address the Kenai Peninsula. We do have people actively working in the shoreline, nearshore areas, recovering oil in the area where there is oil at those locations right now. In addition, we have an on-site assessment team working with a Homer MAC group, that's a multi-agency committee, looking at the six key sites that they have identified. We have just completed a survey out of Seward with that MAC team working in that association with that group to verify that there was no need to do work at this time on the pupping areas for the seals, which were critical in that area. We have an archaeologist on site today, which I believe Admiral Robbins referred to earlier, on those parklands that in the Katmai area to be sure that we have an appropriate plan. We could not put people on the beach there yesterday in that we did not have a fully safe integrated plan for that to work.
Do you have
We are moving in that direction.
Do you have them on the beach today, as you promised?
We did not promise to have them on the beach today.
Well, you said you have them on the beach.
Pardon me?
I was told that they were supposed to be on the beach today.
What we had advised and discussed with the Admiral yesterday, that we were in the process of developing a plan for him to approve that would safely put people on those beaches in compliance with the park rules and regulations. We're moving as rapidly as we can to get agreements from all of the parties that are involved. We are committed to clean up those beaches. There is a secondary item that you need to consider relative to timing. Our environmental experts advise that the time to be on the beaches doing the cleanup is at the time when you have minimum potential for minimum impact from major re-oiling from free water, from free oil on the nearby waters. And it is only in the past few days that we've been in the position in the Shelikof Straits where we can really say that there's no major recoverable free oil on the surface of the water for open ocean
skimming. Is it your contention that the brown tar substance is not recoverable on the surface?
We're not saying that.
You said there's no recoverable oil on the surface.
By open ocean skimming, the type of vessel that we had in there were the Russian skimmer, the Corps of Engineer dredges, the Clean Seas 3.
You're not going to be able to pick up any of that material that I saw out there?
We are going to be able to pick up that material that you saw out there, but not with that major open ocean equipment that was in the area. We have had equipment in the area. We have had people in the area, and we will be moving people onto those beaches under an approved
plan. There were individuals picking up the dead animals on the beach to avoid the... I agree in a priority. That is a priority, but there is also a tendency, of course, for that to get buried by the sand action and the wave action, and it's happening, and it's occurring, and so... I think, why doesn't the plan address this? Why isn't this in the plan that you signed?
The May 1st plan does address picking up and oil and cleaning beaches outside of the Prince William Sound. Yes, sir, it does.
Well, it says other contingencies will be made. It's not in the plan. It just makes a statement as other areas develop, but it does not in detail address that, and yet this plan was submitted on May 1st or 3rd or something.
We estimated a total of 100 impacted miles, of which over 70 would be cleaned. That was defined in the plan, even though the detailed survey assessment has not been completed at this time.
I just would point out in that statement that you gave, the command center points out there's only been about a mile and a third of beach cleaned so far as of whatever, May 4th. So we've got literally hundreds of miles, I'd say, in this area that have this brown tar material on it, out of the 625 miles.
Mr. Harrison, have you received a letter from the original director of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service?